It's the Security Weekly News. It's episode 303. I'm Doug White, and it's Friday the 9th of June, 2023. We've got Phrenology, Barracuda, Move It, Lazarus, Minecraft, ChatGPT, Adrian Sinabria, and more on this edition of the Security Weekly News.
This is a Security Weekly production for security professionals by security professionals. Please visit securityweekly.com/subscribe to subscribe to all the shows on our network.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
It's the show that keeps you up to date on the latest security news twice a week. Your trusted source for accurate security information and expert analysis. It's time for Security Weekly News.
Did you know that Active Directory is exploited in 9 out of 10 cyber attacks? With access to Active Directory, attackers can gain control of your network. To keep attackers out, you need to find and fix Active Directory security gaps. Meet Purple Knight, a free security assessment tool that scans your environment for hundreds of vulnerabilities and helps you fix the problems. Ready to reduce your Active Directory attack surface? Download Purple Knight, the number one Active Directory security vulnerability assessment tool. Visit securityweekly.com/Semperis, S-E-M-P-E-R-I-S, for more information.
Application Security Weekly delivers interviews and news from the worlds of AppSec, DevOps, and all the other ways people find and fix software flaws. Join us as we explore how the latest news highlights modern security practices or reminds us of the missing ones. We also bring insights from interviews on topics from training to threat modeling, from open source tools to cloud native techniques, plus an occasional reference from New Wave to Synth Wave. Find us at securityweekly.com/subscribe or look for Application Security Weekly wherever you pick your podcasts.
Yeah, all right, it's the Security Weekly News, and I'm Doug White. It's a smoky week on the East Coast, and if you're used to sitting around in cigar bars, it didn't seem that much different, but basically it was really orange, so, you know, the cigars probably didn't help. Barracuda Networks has advised customers to immediately replace hacked email security gateway appliances, their ESG product. It said even if it's been patched, they want you to replace it. So on the 18th of May, Barracuda became aware of attacks that were targeting the enterprise security gateway appliances as a result of a zero day. And they began, you know, immediately working to get a patch out, and they had scripts to contain the attack and all this stuff, which they put out, you know, pretty quickly. The initial recommendation that they issued said that they wanted to ensure that all the devices were patched, that you had updated them, you know, their definition databases and all that stuff had been updated and so forth. But in that very same notification, they advised customers to discontinue use of any compromised devices and contact support to receive a new appliance. I mean, you know it's bad when they say they're going to send you a new appliance. You know, that's like when the car dealer calls you and says, hey, would you like to get a brand new car? Yeah, that Ford Pinto you've been driving. Oh, no, it's fine. But we're going to replace the whole car with anything you want. Yeah. But on the 6th of June, they released an action notice that told customers to immediately replace their appliances regardless of the patch level, which implies that the updates and patches may not be actually helping much with this. So Barracuda worked with Mandiant on this issue, and they found that the vulnerability had been being exploited since at least October of 2022, and it's a remote command injection issue which affects a module designed for the initial screening of email attachments. So probably if you can manipulate that, you know, that's pretty bad. So currently the information about the attack said that the attackers had used malware on a subset of appliances to exfiltrate data. Three types of malware were discovered that were in use, and they were named Saltwater, C-Spy, and Seaside, which sound like Mandiant names, because Microsoft always uses names like, you know, Lace Butterfly and stuff. So this sounded kind of like a Mandiant kind of naming thing. But and Mandiant always has pretty good names. But Saltwater apparently allows the attackers to upload and download files and to execute arbitrary commands. And it also could be used for a proxy or tunneling, so an access kind of tool. C-Spy is a backdoor Trojan, so I guess you use one and then you get the Trojan in place. And then C-Side is a reverse shell and command and control function tool. So if you had those three things running in your network, that would be pretty bad. So Barracuda has also shared indicators of compromise and Yara rules on their site. But basically, they're saying if you have one of these, you need to contact them right away, and they're going to, I guess, replace the whole appliance. So don't know. It didn't say exactly where this stuff resides or what it was, so you can check it out. Well, we talked about MoveIt on the show on Tuesday, but new information on Wednesday said that that a Russian cyber extortion gang was attacking the popular file transfer tool, and they said that it's very likely going to have a global impact, and that early data theft victims now include the BBC, the British Broadcasting Company, British Airways, and the Nova Scotian government. So, I mean, there's obviously others, but this was the ones they were talking about here. Emisoft said that this is potentially one of the most significant breaches in recent years. So on Tuesday, we were talking about it, and different people were attributing it to some different groups. Microsoft said it was absolutely Clop, and now they're saying it is Clop. So Clop ransomware has been suspected in this. Clop announced on their dark website on Tuesday evening that the victims, who they suggest number in the hundreds, will have until the 14th of June to get in and negotiate ransom payments with Clop, or their sensitive data is going to be dumped online. Zealous is one of the victims, and Zealous is a leading payroll services provider in the United Kingdom, and they're the ones who serve British Airways, the BBC, and many of these other organizations, and they were listed as being among the impacted users. So Zealous said that it was a, quote, small number of customers that were affected by a, quote, supply chain breach, and that the affected have been notified. Boots, a pharmacy chain in the UK, said that it had been notified and had made their staff aware of the attack. Other groups are doing the same thing. The government of Nova Scotia in Canada said that they were among the victims of this attack. And a University of Rochester in the United States said that they suggested that they were a victim, but they would not confirm it to the author of the article. Now, if you don't recall, MoveIt is a file transfer tool which was mostly used by enterprise-level organizations, and it's mostly used to share very sensitive data with each other. It is reputedly more secure than Dropbox or shared drives and such, although this would tend to suggest otherwise. But at the time of the attacks, there were around 2,500 vulnerable MoveIt servers in the world. And they were found across 790 organizations, which included 200 government agencies that use this tool. It's not known how many of these were targeted, nor how many were compromised at this point. The vulnerability has been being targeted since at least the 29th of March, according to Security Scorecard. In a joint advisory on Wednesday, CISA and the FBI in the United States said that Clop is estimated to have compromised more than 3,000 U.S.-based organizations and 8,000 global organizations since its formation. Clop claims they do not extort government, cities, or police, but, you know, well, Tony Soprano was just a sanitation engineer, so... criminals can say whatever they want to say. They're like politicians, and there's no consequences to them lying and saying, we don't target you. Must be somebody else, of course. So whatever. Speaking of criminal organizations, Lazarus is a very well-known North Korean hacking group that has been around a long time. It's one of the oldest ones I can remember. Lazarus has been leaked to the Atomic Wallet hack, which resulted in a theft of $35 million from crypto wallets over the weekend. I think my crypto wallet never gets targeted since I have like 38 cents in Boingo coins and the equivalent of an old school Subway token I might have two Subway tokens in my account. The attack on Atomic Wallet, though, happened last weekend, and numerous users reported their wallets had been compromised and their funds had been drained. Kind of like when Horst and Jürgen went into town for the fall festival in 1521 and somebody stole their purses while they were sleeping. Yeah. In this case, there's a lot more victims and even less likelihood of getting your hard-earned finnings back. But the single largest victim in this heist lost about $3.5 million from their wallet. Lazarus is often focused on monetary goals to likely fund all their other hacking activities and so forth. Elliptic said that the first evidence this is Lazarus is the laundering strategy. The fact that they use Sinbad Mixer for laundering funds and so forth, it would imply that it's Lazarus. And most of the stolen money could be traced to wallets that had been used in previous Lazarus attacks. So that would pretty much imply that it's Lazarus or some subset of Lazarus. They don't really get into how this attack occurred, but it definitely means you probably should consider how you're storing your wallet funds. Like, you know, don't use those hot wallets online for your major funds. Put those in cold wallets and protect those very carefully. You know, when you carry your life savings to the fair, well, you may end up getting your wallet nicked in some back alley of medieval London if you aren't careful. So, you know. Minecraft is a popular gaming environment, and two modding platforms called Bucket and CurseForge are being used to distribute an information stealer called Fracturizer. Fracturizer injects malicious code into existing projects. The attack is a result of Bucket and CurseForge accounts being compromised, and then those accounts were used to inject malicious code into plugins and mods, which are then adopted into other plugins and mods and mod packs and collections and all these kind of things. One of those was called Better Minecraft, which has over 4.6 million downloads. And if you aren't familiar with how this kind of stuff works, a lot of video games, and it's very a popular concept, video games allow users to develop custom content. And of course, this, you know, makes the game get better, I guess. And it also gets you a lot of free content, because I always remember, like, SimCity was one that I dealt with, and it had unbelievable amounts of custom content that was developed for free by users, and a lot of that content relied on base mods and other mods to the game that would allow those things to function. You know, like, I wrote levels for Duke Nukem back in the day. I mean, I wrote several levels for the Duke Nukem game that were fun, and you know, I developed for some people. But, you know, some games just have massive amounts of content, which really gets out of hand. And you can download this stuff for free and you can install it. But it's really difficult to start chasing through all that stuff, because you suddenly want to download something cool and it has a bunch of dependencies. And so you end up on that crazy download frenzy to get Mr. Fufu's deep fried wombat pieces installed into SimCity. You know, and in the process of installing Mr. Fufu's deep fried wombat pieces as a piece of your game, you end up installing, you know, this base mod and that base mod and this graphics mod and so on and so forth. And most people don't spend a lot of time digging through that stuff to see exactly what it might do. So in this case, many different mods got compromised indirectly, since the API they used was the base point of infection. The article does have an entire list of mods that they know have been compromised, but you know, and the details are in the article of how the malware works and how it's stealing cookies and account credentials. But basically, this malware will take cookies, it takes account credentials, it can manipulate crypto wallet addresses, it can steal your Microsoft account credentials, your Discord account credentials, and your Minecraft account credentials. So if you download mods, well, and most people that play games do, I'd say be very, very careful. Everybody goes down that road if you play games, and this has been a very common attack vector for just about forever, so it can only get worse. I mean, so if you think you might be infected with Fracturizer, meaning you've downloaded mods on Minecraft, they do have a script in the article that you can use to scan for signs of infection, and hopefully the script isn't an infection in itself. Hopefully not, but you can look at the script anyway. A lawyer in New York faces potential sanctions this week in Manhattan due to writing a brief for the court that was filled with fake judicial opinions and fake cited cases. The attorney, Stephen A. Schwartz, admitted that the brief had been generated by ChatGPT. Mr. Schwartz said, quote, "I had no idea that ChatGPT was capable of fabricating entire case citations and judicial opinions, especially in a manner that appeared authentic." I mean, this is a very interesting case to me, because it initially appeared that maybe the lawyer was, quote, you know, was cheating, you know, like didn't want to do their job and instead was just asking ChatGPT to do the work for them. But if you actually read the whole article, I started to realize that maybe the attorney was just actually trying to use ChatGPT in the way in which it was intended, you know, as an assistant. I mean, it makes sense that you could ask it for a write-up of something. So, you know, this was a case about airlines. And, you know, if you went to ChatGPT and said, give me everything there is to know about legal cases involving airlines, that's kind of what I would think of ChatGPT being useful for. I mean, that's the whole point of the AI stuff, is that it can sort through a lot of stuff. And I love the idea of being able to, you know, just say, Majel, how big was the arthropleura? And, you know, and Majel says, why, that would be about 3 meters and weighed 8 stone, Jim. I mean, you know, I wouldn't expect ChatGPT to make up facts. But maybe it does. You know, just like people pretending they know something even if they don't. I mean, that's how I ended up trying to do that open heart surgery on Wizz airline flight. You know, they said, is there a doctor on board? And I said, you know, they didn't say medical doctor. Hand me the scalpel, stat! You know, let's get in there. But anyway, this poor lawyer said that he was told about ChatGPT by some college-aged relatives. So yeah, they were probably cheating on that paper about Ulysses. But basically, it produced this really nice brief with a pile of citations in support of his argument. I mean, too bad none of them are real. So the attorney then said they were just trying to dig deeper and thought this would give them access to a lot of additional databases. And honestly, maybe the person was telling the truth, or this is like the stupidest person on earth. But, you know, stupid people do cheat on things all the time. So beware. ChatGPT is for amusement purposes only and should not be used for real-world practice. So, you know, that paper you're getting ready to turn in your class that ChatGPT wrote, it could be made up. You know, who knows? Well, Google Cloud is offering protection from crypto mining for up to $1 million in expenses if they fail to prevent it with their risk management solution. Now, this has always been a fear for cloud-based operations, at least to me, because you're paying by the cycle. And when we first started looking at this, like at school, I was thinking this would be really great. I could get rid of my VM servers and all this stuff, and I could put all this on this cloud site. But it's essentially like, what if these students just leave it running? It starts to be like somebody stealing your credit card and flying around first class while you don't know your credit card's been stolen. I mean, if a crypto miner compromised your cloud-based systems and was being used to, you know, mine crypto, and it could just scale through the roof and you didn't have all these constraints and things set around it, wow, it's one of those really bad things. You know, like that first time you took a cell phone to Europe and you got that 700 euro phone bill because you didn't realize you should turn off data in France. Yeah, not that that happened. Yeah, it did happen to me. But I mean, you know, like that. So Google says if customers follow best practices and the premium service fails to detect and notify customers of crypto mining attack, and it's within 30 days of the attack, you can request credits. Now, I started reading that and I immediately got paranoid. I was like, this is starting to sound like one of those legal documents that you sign up for, like trip insurance or something. And then when you actually try to make the claim, there's so many caveats you never actually manage to get anything back, like travel insurance. Nothing is a bigger swindle than travel insurance in my experience. But there does seem to be a lot of limitations to what they're covering and how it's covered and so forth. So if you think this is in, you know, applies to you, be sure you read the fine print, probably with an attorney and not ChatGPT, and don't just click OK and hope for the best. But a report from Google in 2022 said that 65% of compromised cloud account accounts that were compromised experienced crypto mining. I mean, it is Google saying that, so, you know, it is a thing. Well, workplace providers like Microsoft and Slack are issuing cautions against employers using those metrics to determine productivity and suggest that activity and productivity are not the same thing, and that the metrics are not accurate in determining how much work someone is actually doing. They go on to caution that using this type of employee monitoring may ultimately break trust with your employees and not be accurate anyway. So look, folks, spying on your employees and users is a bad idea in general, in my opinion. And trying to evaluate productivity based on some industrial age metric of how many gurgits you can press out of your Pringer every hour is pretty dated. So unless you're making gurgits, in which case it might be okay. I mean, especially if you're in the 19th century. But I mean, I've worked in some pretty bad places and, you know, they expect you to grind. And if you weren't clacking those keys, somebody took note. But look, people work in different ways and you need to set clear goals with obtainable and clear objectives and then measure those objectives, not how many times I hit the A key on my keyboard every hour. I mean, if you want to pay me by the word, fine. So long as, you know, I know that I can produce that many words. You want to pay me by the hour? Well, get the idea that measuring how often my mouse moves and trying to use that to determine if I'm actually working is pretty naive. And I can just write a mouse jiggling program that, you know, on your time, by the way, to make it look good. So this is a good article to review, I think, whatever side of this argument you're on. You are going to be tempted to use metrics from Discord or Zoom or Teams or any of those things. So be careful that you aren't making a lot of foolish assumptions and losing good employees because their mouse wasn't vibrating fast enough or that it was vibrating too fast or whatever is appropriate. Yeah, that kind of thing. Well, often referred to as the Fabio of cybersecurity, please welcome Adrian Sinabria. Sanabria. I swear I didn't take Quaaludes this morning. Sanabria.
Almost had the dismount there.
You've never been on the show before, have you, Adrian?
I have. You brought me on.
Oh, you were on. Okay. Yeah, I wasn't here that day or something.
No, you were here.
Okay.
No, it was one day Jason couldn't be here, something like that. It's been a while.
All those head injuries, you know, it just starts to come. That bill starts to come due. But you're going to talk about the Verizon 2023 data breach report. I mean, that was I think that's a pretty interesting report that we see every year. So you want to give us a rundown?
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that it's probably one of the most read annual reports in security, and there are lots of annual reports in security. But Verizon basically turned this one report into a business, and there are like 6 or 7 full-time folks that just build this report year-round, which a lot of it's gathering data from other people. Like they've got tons of law enforcement partners and private industry partners, people who are feeding them this incident data. And so the Verizon data breach report is all about understanding all the attacks that happened, all the breaches, and they actually separate them out. They clearly define the difference between an incident and a data breach. So an incident, something where they haven't been able to confirm, or they were able to confirm that data wasn't stolen, but it was still a security incident that they had to work. And then you've got confirmed data breaches, which is when data was stolen, there was some kind of risk to customers or to the business. And in this year's report, they've got over 16,000 security incidents and 5,199 confirmed data breaches. And that's a really good sample size. That's a lot of data to dig through and pull some insights out of. And this is I think they've been doing it since 2008, so they get to compare it. They've got all this past data and these past stats that they can pull trends out of.
Well, one thing I was going to get your opinion on, and this is just pure opinion. I know you don't study this stuff, but. I keep seeing these reports, and I like the Verizon data breach reports. I always look at those, but I mean, we always see these things about, you know, this increase over year increase and all this kind of stuff. How much of that do you think is just because, one, they have a better collection of people to get data from? You know, every year we see that they got more and more people that they're actually collecting data from, for law enforcement, FBI, and all these kind of things that didn't exist in 2008. I mean, I assure you, if you contact the FBI in 2008 and ask them for a report on data breaches, they would have been like, thank you for contacting the FBI. Your call is valuable to us, and we'll get back to you just as soon as we can. Click. And also, do you think companies are more willing in 2023 to report these things to the FBI or to anyone than they were, say, even just a few years ago?
Right. There's totally a visibility bias. And, you know, they're very aware of that. Like I said, they've been doing this since 2008. These are people who, these are data scientists, you know, people who specialize in understanding all those kinds of visibility biases that, if you expand your reach and your ability to see things, then, yeah, it'll look like there's you'll get this artificial increase in the number of things happening just because you're seeing more of it or people are reporting more of it. So that's something you always have to take into account. And it applies to this year's stats here, you know, because there's an interesting, you know, kind of discrepancy between the stats that Verizon has and the stats that FBI has. And FBI has some really interesting stats from their, what does IC3 stand for? I can't remember. But the FBI also has their you can report this stuff to the FBI, and they get thousands and thousands and thousands of reports every year. I think I have some stats on that as well. But again, that's just going to be a picture of it. Like how many organizations that pay a ransom are going to tell the FBI about it? Some of them do. Some of them don't. So in 2022, FBI got 2,385 ransomware complaints, which is much smaller than the 21,832 business email compromise complaints that they got. The ransomware complaints totaled $34 million in losses, whereas the BEC complaints were 80 times larger, at $2.7 billion. So I don't know. Like in the BEC case, are we seeing 90% of the actual incidents that happen? And in the ransomware case, we're only seeing 20%? We don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not criticizing the report. I think they do a great job. I think sometimes news outlets and things pick these reports up and they get real excited about, you know, there was 160% increase over, you know, and I'm like, yeah, yeah. But is that real? I mean, or was this is just now we report it? Because I remember the very first time I ever did a data breach case, the very first thing, I went to this organization. I sat down in this room and the very first person I talked to was not the IT people. It was not any, it was a lawyer who made it absolutely clear I had to sign this NDA. I had to understand I could never discuss this with anyone anywhere, no matter what was found. And, you know, it was just absolutely right. Like that. And I think that was the general attitude of both law enforcement agencies and corporate, you know, forever. And we see that changing. I mean, we definitely see companies being willing to report these things now, and I do think that's driving some of that growth. But yeah, I mean, it always worries me when I see a news article and they say, "Oh, a huge increase," and I'm like, "Yeah, is it really? You know, or is it just people are reporting it now, which is great?"
Well, it's interesting you say that because typically everything's up and to the right, but in the case of ransomware, we've got drops. So one of the interesting things here in terms of visibility is Chainalysis, which is a company that tracks illicit cryptocurrency payments. And most ransomware does use cryptocurrency. So we kind of have this this because of the nature of blockchain and Bitcoin and most cryptocurrency that's used for the ransoms, at least. There's no anonymity. Like we can see everything that's happening. And, you know, once those wallet addresses are reported, Chainalysis can track it. And they saw a significant drop last year. Payments were $765 million. That's for 2021. And this year they're, under half a billion. They're $456.8 million in 2022. So we actually saw a drop in payments. That doesn't mean that people are getting hacked and hit with ransomware less. Maybe it means they're paying, you know, the actual payouts are reduced because they have less money to pay the extortion, or they're just choosing not to pay more often.
Well, I mean, the FBI has been telling people not to pay ransoms for a long time. And I think, you know, people have to make that decision for themselves. And I also think that companies are more prepared to deal with some of this stuff now than they were even just a couple of years ago. They're starting to get, and of course the pandemic drove a lot of this because people were having to shortcut their security systems because people were working from home and they weren't ready for that and all this kind of stuff. And now they're starting to get that under control and that, you know, these holes are starting to get plugged. So maybe it's a legitimate drop and maybe it means that we are starting to get some more accurate reporting picture of what's going on.
Yeah, and the Verizon DBIR shows ransomware growth is totally flat there as well. So we've got several different sources, reports from Chainalysis, reports from FBI showing a drop, Chainalysis shows a drop, and Verizon data breaches shows no growth in the number of incidents. That they're not really looking at the amount of money, the direct losses from it, but yeah, once you see it across three different, you know, separate entities, you know, all reporting their same data, you know, I think we can be pretty confident that ransomware is kind of flattened out. I mean, it's still the dominant type of attack that's out there. If you look at Verizon's data, it's still the number one go-to for attackers in terms of just raw numbers. But BEC is making them way more money. And it makes sense when you think about it. Like maybe you hack an email system. In some of these cases, they don't even have to hack anything. They just have to convince somebody to send money to another place. And it seems like, maybe I'm crazy. It seems like a fairly easy thing to solve. Like maybe you have an email plugin that works kind of like DNS and translates routing numbers into names, you know, so that instead of, you know, just taking those numbers that come in the email, you see that, you know, you're going to send $40 million to a Cyprus bank. Is that what you intend to do?
Yeah. I mean that's been a scam for a while, and it's an effective one. I mean if you've got just a little bit of spear phishing information, you know, you can, I know any number of companies that have called and asked about that and said, it wasn't $40 million, but I mean, people are saying, you know, we transferred $236,000 in payments to this bank account in Crete or Cyprus or Oman or somewhere. And they're like, we don't think this was legit. What do you think? And you go look at, it and go, well, this email that requested this and this voicemail that you had that verified it are all from like foreign numbers. Do you do business in Oman? And you're like, oh no, we only do business here in New England. And you're like, yeah, your money's gone.
That's a pretty basic process change, right? Like you just need an extra check in there, or use, you know, don't transfer money without a system that has these sanity checks built in. You know, that seems like a pretty simple thing to solve. But yet, you know, $2.7 billion reported in the U.S., you know, is already higher than the global amount of direct losses from ransomware. So, you know, we kind of like to fetishize like all the crazy attacks and things like that out there, all the state-sponsored attacks, like there's some interesting side-channel attacks that are out there, you know, but in reality, like if you're an attacker, you know, the less steps it takes to get your payday, you know, to get money in your pocket, the better. And they're going to do that.
Old fashioned scams work great. They still work great. People been doing this stuff since the dawn of time. I mean, that scam with the calling people with routing numbers. I mean, I always remember Frank Abagnale talking about, you know, he had deposit slips printed up with his pre-printed with his account number on them. And he would just scatter them around in banks and people were trying to deposit money and they just, you know. I'm like, okay, you'd think somebody would notice that, but they didn't. And, you know, it was a scam. So
yeah, investment fraud was even bigger than BEC scams. $3.31 billion of losses, direct losses reported to the FBI. And 78% of that was crypto related. You know, so a lot more money is being lost there than in these hacking.
Well, there's never been better opportunities for scams than during gold rushes, right? You can go back in time to actual gold rushes. You can, any kind of thing that's hot, if an article comes out and says New York real estate getting ready to boom, get in while the getting's good, you know, there people are going, well, I can get rich. And when some guy calls and says, hey, I can put you in this NFT, I can put you in this EFT, I can put you in this building for $500,000. And people go, what's the return? And, you know, I mean, I can say whatever I want, right? I got a New York Times article say real estate boom coming. And I say, yeah, you give me the $500,000 now and I guarantee you in 2 years you'll have $500 million and somebody will do it.
Call center fraud was $1 billion in the U.S. in 2022. Call center fraud alone. It's huge.
Is that the one where the guy calls and tells you that they need that your computer's been compromised? Is that what they're calling call center fraud?
Or that your version of Windows isn't legit?
Yeah, that kind of thing. Yeah. Because I mean, I get probably three of those calls a day from people that call me and say, "Hey, you know, you."
I don't answer calls anymore.
Well, yeah, I don't answer them either, but I can tell which ones they are. I mean, it's the same kind of crap, and you get voicemails from them and stuff. Please call us immediately. You know, if you don't call us right now, your bank account's going to be closed and all this kind of stuff. Call our help center because, you know, I got one the other day that said all my licenses had been found to be invalid and they were pirated.
Yeah.
And I was going to have to pay all these fines unless I called Microsoft right now, you know, like right now.
Oh,
now.
Urgency. Urgency is always, that's a red flag.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, and, you know, and I think most of us don't actually go through these things very much, but, you know, who knows? Any other interesting stats there?
Well, you know, I just wanted to throw in a bit about like why you would want to read the Verizon DBIR, not just for these very high level, you know, kind of stats on, you know, what kind of attacks to look out for. But also they go into a lot of details on how companies are getting hacked that can really help you security teams plan what kind of activities and products are we going to focus on and spend money on and spend our time on, you know, and are we focusing our funds and resources and time on the right thing? So it can help you kind of align your organization to what we know is actually, you know, the bad stuff that's actually happening out there. So yeah. I think that's the key reason to read it.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I read it, because I get calls and people ask me things and I want to have something to back it up. And there's a lot of great stuff there in that report. So,
yeah.
Well, I do. I encourage every CISO to read this kind of report and you know, start putting that in your head and you know, keeping up with that kind of thing. Thank you, Adrian, for joining us. An interesting report. It's a little lengthier than we've made it sound, probably, but you know, regardless, it's a good report to be reading. So thanks a lot.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for being here. And finally, a streamer named Kurtos. I don't know if it's Curtis or what, but a streamer named Kurtos had taken on a challenge to shave their head for a charity stream. So the charity stream was in support of leukemia and lymphoma society. So this is a good thing. But apparently they were going to shave their head on a live stream. I actually watched the stream and, you know, it's like kind of stuff. And Kurtos found that there was a headset shaped indent in the top of their skull. And I haven't checked myself by shaving my head, but you know, if I have one, I'm going to blame Paul and I want to be paid in Placentia cigars. So, or Placentia could sponsor my show. Thank you very much. But you know, I mean, all that horrendous pain and suffering I've incurred on Security Weekly, being forced to drink quality liquor and smoke high dollar cigars, while wearing a headset, mind you. But well, in this case, it turned into a thing apparently, and a whole lot of people started like shaving their heads on their streams to see if they have these cranial indents that are being caused by headsets. Now, before you grab your straight razor and a mirror, because if you're shaving your head any other way, you're just a wimp. I mean, you got to do it old school. I mean, I'm talking. Don't do this at home. That would be bad. But, you know, if you got your webcam and you shave your head and you're wanting to see if you actually have this indentation, you really should understand that it takes 297 pounds of pressure to actually damage a human skull. Don't ask me how I know that. But let's just say that scene in Casino with Joe Pesci got me curious. So we'll leave it at that. And I hit my head on a lot of ski slopes. But the indent that they have is just in the soft tissue in your head. It's not your actual skull, like they were saying. Like, you know, like, oh my God, my bones are deformed. I'm like, no, they're not. It's just fatty tissue on your head, of which you appear to have a lot. But you know, you just touch your head, right? Like I keep doing. Yeah, it's like, I may take up a career in phrenology as a second act. So I'm going to leave the school, get one of those vans. I'm going to take it on the road. Dr. Doug's Traveling Medicine Show will be rich, I tells you. But anyway, I will be in Augsburg, Germany on the 20th through the 24th of June at the Green Cities Conference. If you're going to be around in that region, drop by. That is the news. Thank you, Adrian, and we'll see you next week on the Security Weekly News.